We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Alrighty there, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News, coming to you from an undisclosed location in Australia where the government has assured us it has invested heavily in bunkers to keep us safe from the potential wars that they start with the tanks that they brought. Fortunately, we thought ahead and we pre-ordered the bunkers, so they will arrive in 2023, a full year before the expected arrival of our tank armada, giving us time to organise a new Who's the Most Useful Society structure where comedian podcasters will sit firmly just above politicians in the new hierarchy. My name is Matt Harvey. Thanks for coming back, and if you're new, thanks for checking it out for the first time. Hope you have a good time. Just before we get into it, I am actually in Adelaide quite soon, next week, depending on when you listen to this. From March 2nd until March 6th, I'll be doing my storytelling and satire show, Wage Against the Machine. I'm really looking forward to having you all come out. Those of you who have already bought tickets, thank you so much. And those of you who will buy tickets just down the road, thank you when you do that. Please come and check out the show. Also, I'll be doing it at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Dates are March 31st until April 23rd, but only on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. So just go to the Comedy Festival website. It's got all the details there. And that is at Heroes Karaoke Bar on Burke Street, which is just near the Comedy Republic. So if you're lingering in the city and you want to go see a show, come check me out. I will be going also to Edinburgh for the first time ever. Now that the borders are open and the world is opening up again, and the UK doesn't seem to really care that much about COVID numbers or even the idea that COVID might even exist, I'll be heading over to Edinburgh with my show from last year, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. So if you happen to live in that area, if you want to come check out a storytelling show without satire, just pure storytelling from the world pre-pandemic, please come and check it out. It will be part of one of the free fringes. I'm still like sorting stuff out, but basically being one of those pay what you feel venues. So please come check that out. But until then, let's get on with the show. I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines. Studio Ghibli has finally caved in public demand to build a theme park based on the magical world of the studio's beloved animated movies. Turns out, Hayao Miyazaki was actually quite against the idea of the theme park being created, but eventually changed his mind when he was able to see the financial records of Disney. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching! Major attractions at the park will include rides such as the Sitting Peacefully in the Park and Enjoying the Beauty of Nature ride, the Critiquing the Destruction of the Natural World by Grid Capitalist Spinning Cups, and the Spirited Away All You Can Eat Pig Transformation Buffet and Live Show. Should be a good time. I'm really looking forward to checking it out. The former New South Wales Premier and candidate for early onset Alzheimer's disease medication trial, Gladys Berejiklian, has been appointed to a new position at Optus. At first, people took to social media expressing their confusion, exclaiming, "This is baffling. How on earth is a woman who famously got caught in a phone tapping scandal and a text leaking scandal a good representative for a phone company?" Until Gladys came out and promoted Optus' new untappable phone, the Optus Tin Can and String Plus. Google has been developing a science startup that will pursue solutions for aging, with the intended goal of solving death. If successful, the only concerns people will have will be being left to languish in their shitty job for the rest of their extended healthy lives, as they won't pay you to just stay alive. They won't do it. You'll have to work. And being stabbed to death, of course, that's always going to be a concern. Given how calmly and respectfully recent scientific developments, such as the developments of mRNA vaccines, have been openly embraced by a generous community of pro-science citizens, I am confident the invention of stopping death will not cause any concerns at all. This has, however, caused something of a concern for socialites, who have developed no marketable skills and were awaiting the timely death of their rich family members for their inheritance. Fortunately, the stabbing option will still be available. One of the methods being developed is the deploying of nanobots in the body, which could help overcome the problems of incorrect DNA replication, one of the central causes of aging, and will be an easy means of charging a monthly subscription to this death-defying service. Ah, capitalism, you've done it again. Vladimir Putin has ordered his administration to consider a new system to ban toxic internet content. With his main operative in America knocked down, he'll be shutting down his own troll farms and having a serious invasion of China. Putin signaled support for a proposal from a member of his Human Rights Council for a new voluntary mechanism to ban toxic content. And hang on, wait. Putin has a Human Rights Council? Did he get it from the bizarro world? Or does he only have it to do the exact opposite of what they actually recommend? I don't understand this at all. The UK Culture Secretary, Nadine Dorris, has suggested new laws would hold to account streaming sites like Netflix for airing jokes such as those made by Jimmy Carr about the Gypsy Roma and Traveller community and the Holocaust. So you can spring into action at a moment's notice. Jimmy should have told his lazy joke at the PM's COVID party. It would have been buried deeper than the truth about Jeffrey Epstein's death. Whoopsie! Carr issued a trigger warning to the audience at the beginning of his one-hour special, admitting his performance contained terrible things. I watched the special and didn't see any mention of the Tory party, so I feel he probably could have saved the trigger warning and said, this special contains Jimmy Carr jokes. So you know what you're getting into, right? Right? Pretty sure you know. Folk rocker Neil Young has pulled his songs from streaming service Spotify to protest Joe Rogan's misinformation-spreading podcast. Seems nobody has the courage to let him know about what's happening on YouTube. Man, is he gonna have real barstool blues when he finds out. He'll be asking, what did you do to my life? I'm helpless. But please, don't cry no tears. Don't let it bring you down, old man. This kind of misinformation is temporary. Everybody knows. This is nowhere. Even the anti-vaxxers themselves. But they might need a little bit of a different harvest to help these irritated souls mellow my mind, turning them back to ordinary people. Otherwise, people who don't get vaxxed will find that they have ambulance blues. After Young pulled the song, Spotify's market capitalization fell about $2.1 billion over a three-day span, which is only 480 billion, 549 million, 199,085 payments to other artists. The best part of it all is this little scene conspiracy theory that vaccine skeptics and COVID-19 conspiracy theorists cooked up, claiming that Pfizer either owned the rights to Young's music catalogue or, through a chain of connections, held sway over the rock star and influenced or even ordered his pro-vaccine stance. Conspiracy theorists jump to this conclusion so quickly because they have never seen someone take a principled stance without seeing how it directly benefits them first. Pretty simple. The Daily Beast has reported that in Pennsylvania, Maine, Michigan, and Iowa, in recent months, school board meetings have been disrupted by allegations that educators are giving special treatment to furry students. Now that's not students with little bits of fur on them, that is students who are furries, the subculture furries. The rumours circulated for months last year in a concerned parents Facebook group, the home of reasonable, well-reasoned and calm speech, which promoted fears that furries could be in your child's classroom kissing at your child and licking themselves. The parents were identified as far-right parents who know that bullying gay and trans kids is less acceptable than villainizing goth kids as devil worshippers is not really a thing. Nor can witches be burned at the moment. So they needed a new category of people to demonize in an attempt to unify the townsfolk and drive the shares of local pitchfork businesses through the roof. They also equally are demonstrating how long it has been since they have been in high school. Any kids who showed up in a furry costume would be bullied harsher than anything these parents could propose. It's pretty simple, guys. It's high school. NAPLAN analysis shows no variation between the private and public sector. The researchers found that these results undermined conceptions of private schools adding value to student outcomes. Liberal Party members were quick to point out this simply meant that more money will be needed for private schools so that they can see better results. Republican and living avatar of misinformation, Marjorie Taylor Greene, has been mocked online for a video in which she confuses the name of the Nazi secret police, the Gestapo, with a chilled tomato soup, gazpacho. While this seems like a simple, stupid mistake that someone who jumps to comparisons with Nazi Germany at the drop of a hat, like over nothing really, if she didn't get a second sauce with nuggets, it's Nazi Germany. You know, stuff like that. And someone who has spilled wild and absurd conspiracies about Jewish space lasers should be across, as they are clearly an expert on what Nazi Germany looks like. Right? Right? But I disagree. I actually think that this is a bold choice and something rare for a politician, which is sticking to one's principles. See, Taylor Greene is known for spreading misinformation and misunderstanding fundamental pieces of information. And here she is, publicly sticking to her guns, making mistakes on knowledge that you'd expect that she'd be across, like the inner workings of the Nazi super machine. But she has boldly, and I go so far as to say heroically, stuck to her principles. You just don't get that kind of commitment from politicians anymore. It's great to see. Samsung's new Galaxy S22 phones are built partly with recycled ocean plastics. Samsung has found the easiest way to obtain enough plastics is to just directly convert fish into phones. Swinburne University has threatened to use debt collectors to pursue its own casual staff after accidentally overpaying them following a cyber attack. The university accidentally overpaid about 550 casual and part-time employees in November. In most cases, the overpayments totaled less than $500. So after years of funding cuts by the coalition, they are desperate to show that they could be considered team players and are more akin to the government's way of handling problems than previously thought. So maybe a little grant money or a car park could be sent their way just to solve the problem. New rules in the UK could force people to provide ID before they use Google or Reddit in an attempt to restrict pornographic websites from being viewed by children. While the precise way those checks will happen has not been revealed, suggestions have included requiring people to require credit card details or other personally identifying information, or answering questions that only an adult would be able to answer, like, what is the meaning of life? The answer is one of a number of choices, like to toil away so that you don't starve, life is meaningless now, get back to work, oh, and I'll be docking you pay for contemplating existence on company time. Or, life, yes, I remember having a life, at which point the computer is actually very sad for you, and you get 2 days without having to answer any ID questions or prove yourself before you can watch porn. A Russian art gallery says one of its security guards has vandalized an avant-garde painting on loan from the country's top art repository by drawing eyes on the picture's deliberately featureless faces. The security guard said, staring into the featureless void reminded him of every opportunity that he hadn't taken, every chance that had passed him by. The face was a mirror of his own lack of ambition and featureless existence. The gallery said the damage could be repaired, but the Russian authorities will be taking him to a black site to interrogate him nonetheless. Being on the verge of war, it's important that they keep their skills sharp. You never know who they'll be interrogating next. Independent MC Zali Steggle has defended receiving a $100,000 donation from Rams Homeland founder and former coal investor John Kinghorn and his family. Stegall has been outspoken about the need to reduce emissions from fossil fuels and adopt green alternatives. This mindset apparently doesn't apply to her donors, as she has been defending the donation by saying, "If you ruled out taking donations from anyone who has invested in coal at one time or another, you pretty much rule out everyone, as most people have, through their superannuation. Accidentally stumbling onto an excellent idea that she should be running on if she wants to, this whole, like, not living up to your principles thing to disappear in a hot minute." And while the donation is clearly hypocrisy, Stegall has still got some goodwill to burn, as she is like Dorothy, ousting the Wicked Witch of the East, but then getting caught using a racial slur to describe the former Wicked the Witch turned House Foundation. Sure, this is a bad thing she did, but the amount of evil done by the other team gives a lot of room to play in the field of hypocrisy. So, like, lean in, girl, lean in. New Zealand authorities have turned on the sprinklers and blasted out vaccine messages, Barry Manilow songs, and the Macarena on a repeat loop to try and flush out several hundred protesters who have been camped on Parliament's grassy grounds. The attempt to move the protesters failed, so they were forced to move on to more serious measures by blasting Baby Shark. Even James Blunt got in on the action, tweeting, "Give me a shout if this doesn't work." But the protesters would not be deterred, proving that they were already beyond help. Fortunately, Australia has recently struck upon the answer that they need to consider the unconsiderable. This.
Take me to the April sun in Cuba. Oh.
Oh, God. Oh. Oh, make it stop. Make it stop. Oh. Oh. But that was considered too inhumane to inflict upon other human beings. Oh, I can't believe that they would even consider that. However, after this video was released, New Zealand band Dragon slammed Scott Morrison for co-opting their hit song to humanise himself ahead of the federal election. Turns out, after the failure to control the pandemic outbreak, install satisfactory quarantine, implement worker support at a pace that isn't glacial and actually supports all workers, keep the koalas from becoming endangered, stopping the barrier reef from becoming whiter than an aerial shot of a clan rally, failing to stay in the country while it burned fires so large and destructive that the fires could actually be seen from space, or to adequately respond to climate change in any way that is effective, invest in further technologies to lift us into the burgeoning field of renewable energies, and get a person to want to shake his hand, Scott Morrison is appearing about as human as Tom Hanks in the Polar Express. Ugh. Don't stick up on me, Tom. He is the avatar of being the Valley in the Uncanny Valley. It's hard to know who's less human, Scott Morrison or Mark Zuckerberg, but at least Zuckerberg's main workmate is a computer that he built himself. It doesn't know that he's weird. Morrison is supposed to be from marketing, a group who supposedly know human behaviour so well that they can manipulate us into buying anything from anyone. Did nobody tell him that maybe playing a ukulele, an instrument that originated in Hawaii, and singing a song about leaving your troubles to go on a sunny holiday might not play as endearing from a man who exacerbated a climate crisis by a larger degree than the temperature that the country has had to raise its maximum temperature weather forecasts to acknowledge? If he's going to pick a song from New Zealand to embarrass himself with on national TV, can he at least have chosen this?
How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre.
That feels much more appropriate when describing this Prime Minister. But that's the end of headlines. Let's get on to the main stories today, this week. First up, out of retirement and into the fire news. Retirees, the number one source of customers telling you stories that go nowhere. After the Morrison government's failure to allow the age of forklift drivers to drop below that of an adult, they have decided this time to go in the other direction. Unleash the elderly! New rules being talked about could mean retirees could be allowed to work without having their government payments reduced, leading papers to declare that a grey army is coming to fill staff shortages from lazy millennials and Gen Zers across the economy, who are banging on about some sort of need to be represented fairly and equitably. Whatever. Whereas older generations just shut up and took it from their bosses and certainly won't complain that they have to listen to 20 and 30 year olds who have nothing better to do but complain about life. That wouldn't be their style at all. In a move that should come as a surprise to absolutely nobody, as the coalition has always relied on the elderly to get them through everything, especially elections, word is that they are considering getting franking credits for them by investing some of the money without a payment reduction, just on the down low. Lobby group National Seniors said axing the income test on the age pension would be a powerful incentive for people in their 60s and 70s to stay in the workforce, now that they just need to find an incentive for bosses to hire older employees when even the young staff that they have are struggling to keep up with the outrageous demands on time, speed, and physical capabilities. But I'm sure that won't be a problem at all. With some workplaces like Amazon concerned that they're actually going to run out of new employees to hire as they destroy the hope and the bodies of so many of their employees. I can't imagine expecting a 70-year-old man to piss into a water bottle would go over well. Though, maybe they'll exclusively hire people with catheters who won't need to stop and do young people things like use their urethra to take a whiz. An increasing number of businesses are reporting struggling to find workers, with the jobless rate at 4.2% and forecast by the Reserve Bank to end around 3.75% at the end of 2022. Though there has been few reports about the reason certain employers are struggling to find workers, like are they offering a living wage to workers? Are the reasonable demands on hours being made and siding with their staff when customers lose their shit in store? Is that being offered or not? And very little is made of the fact that we actually have a value that's called the NIRU, the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. Now, the NIRU is the lowest unemployment rate that can be sustained without causing wages and growth and inflation to rise. They literally call it spare capacity because we got all these bums sitting around not working as much as they could or as much as they should or even at all. So we need to incentivize them with some wage rises. The government has increased the JobSeeker income free area and the age pension work bonus in a bid to bring more people into the jobs market. Under the bonus, the first $300 of fortnightly income is not counted toward the pension income test, just like it was during the JobKeeper period, which allowed people to work even though there was no actual work to be done, and goes to show that they know, they are fully aware, the number is way too low for people to actually earn any kind of money and not remain flat broke anyway. But they're not going to do anything about it. Australia's labour participation rate among people over 65 is 15.2%. While the rate has increased over recent years, that has largely matched the lift since 2017 in the retirement age. So really it's remaining about the same because people can't retire unless you let them. And most of them can't afford the FIRE lifestyle. Not to mention the fact that the age of the pension access actually reaches 67 in mid-2023, increasing the percentage of people in that age group exponentially. So we can look for a grey army boom! They must just have been really inspired by the recent spate of prominent septuagenarians taking on high-profile jobs such as the American president in the last half decade. National Senior cited New Zealand as an example of the problems caused by Australia's approach to means testing of the age pension. In New Zealand, where the jobless rate fell to a record low of 3.2% in December, almost a quarter of all pensioners work, whereas fewer than 3% of the Australian pensioners are in the workforce. And seeing these numbers, I will say it is time for these lazy boomers and silent generationists, I don't know how you collectively pronounce them, like millennial silent generationers, silent generationists, whatever, to get off their lazy butts and get back to work. They need to earn a place in society and stop bleeding the state dry. These are supposed to be the ones who just shut up and do it. And now that it needs doing, where are they? Where are they? Crying about what they deserve like a bunch of privileged babies. If you didn't spend all your money on jelly salad and saved for your retirement, you'd be able to take a holiday to Bali and wander the beach in a half falling off sarong, annoyed that the locals speak their own language, but you didn't. You didn't, did you? So get back to it. Get back to work. Moving on now to spy news. China, Australia's angry neighbour to the north-ish, who's always drilling holes in the fence for no particular reason at all. Nothing to see here. Australia's national security agencies fear a wealthy Chinese businessman who set up a sophisticated spy ring to get Labour candidates elected in the upcoming federal election still feels emboldened to interfere in the nation's democratic process. And we can't have foreign businessmen interfering with our elections. We have enough of our own wealthy business people attempting to interfere with the election as it is. Best we stick with an Australian-made business person, as they will clearly have Australian values at heart. And Rupert Murdoch, we can let him do it as well. He's not technically Australian anymore, he gave up his Australian citizenship, but we will make an exception for him. Now, Rupert is a man so dedicated to the Australian way of life, he makes sure to manipulate millions of votes every year, so no matter where he lives in the world, his mind is never far from his home. How many votes have you manipulated today, dear listeners? None? Well, where is your dedication to the system? Where is your dedication to making sure that the people that you want are in power? And this is why millennials get nothing done. Apparently, Chinese spies tried to bankroll New South Wales Labor candidates in the federal election in an attempt to get sympathetic and vulnerable MPs elected to federal parliament. The plot was foiled by the nation's counter-espionage agency, ASIO, preventing the spies from getting the Labor candidates pre-selected. Because of its intervention, no candidates of concern were ever endorsed. Instead, the stellar New South Wales team, who has done a smashing job of handling COVID and getting the entire country interested in local politics by turning it into a scandal-driven drama, the likes of which Neighbours would be chomping at the bit to put to air and would likely still be being funded if it was writing anything anywhere near as juicy as that, went to the Liberal Party. Yeah, that's right. So instead, they got to be in charge and empathetically look after the state. Now, the Liberal Party, being the bastion of respectable behaviour that they are, would never use China, Chinese people, or Chinese influence to manipulate a vote of any kind. They would never authorise the placement of multiple cases of election signs which resembled official signs from the Australian Electoral Commission telling voters in either Mandarin or Cantonese to give their first preference to the Liberal Party candidates at 13 polling stations in the electorate of Treasurer and Mann attempting to launch the newest cute reboot of a previous popular character, Baby Cole, Josh Frydenberg's seat at Kooyong, nor would they in 29 polling booths in nearby Chisholm. which was won by current federal member of Chisholm and woman responding to the general call out, "If you manipulated Chinese voters, raise your hand!" Gladys Liu, with the clear intention of manipulating non-English speaking voters. That would be unethical, possibly illegal, and they would never do it. And certainly, a member of such high standing as this would never misfill in paperwork listing all organisations which they are or have been a member of or active supporter of, failing to declare her council membership for two chapters of an organisation called the China Overseas Exchange Association, which, according to the ABC, were part of the Chinese government's efforts to spread influence overseas. That wouldn't happen. That would be unethical and potentially very dangerous. Nor would there be honorary chair of two other organisations linked to the Chinese government's United Front work propaganda and foreign influence activities and fail to also declare that. No, I can't have you thinking these things about Gladys Liu. It'd be as suspicious as finding out that the Chinese Communist Party's propaganda outlet, the Global Times, has published a series of articles endorsing Liberal Party leader Scott Morrison, going so far as to praise Morrison's deep understanding and unambiguous perception, as well as his Confucian wisdom. While such articles would definitely be unethical and certainly send the wrong message across any sort of spectrum, political or otherwise, I happen to agree with the assessment that Scott Morrison is full of Confucian wisdom. So I've broken down some of the Confucian sayings, we've had a bit of a look, and we dug up some old Confucian wisdom that applies to Scott Morrison. So here we go. Music produces a kind of pleasure which human nature cannot do without. A classic thought from the Book of Rites, which is why the Hillsong Church didn't get in any trouble when they ran a non-music festival. Give a bowl of rice to a man, and you will feed him for a day. Teach him how to grow his own rice, and you will save his life. Which is clearly the longer way of expressing the PM's favourite phrase, the best form of welfare is a job. No lake so still but it has its wave, no circle so perfect but that it has its blur. I would change things for you if I could. As I cannot, you must take them as they are. Which, when you think about it, has formed the fundamental core of the Liberal Party's guiding principles for as long as they have been in power. I wish we could do something, but we can't. So suck it up. When you have faults, do not fear to abandon them. A noble Confucian thought that we can see the Prime Minister implementing every day as he keeps refugees in detention. As the act of keeping people in limbo in detention is a huge fault of which he is not afraid to abandon by leaving them in detention until they become someone else's problem. So wise. The man who moves a mountain begins by carrying away small stones. Another example of Confucian wisdom from the classic Confucius best thinker, Confucius the Analects. Here we see the primary purpose of all the mining we have been doing, which has been so expertly hidden from us. We are invited to understand we are simply looking to move the mountain of climate responsibility one small stone at a time, one piece of coal at a time. So deep, so wise. And finally, who among us can deny that not just Morrison himself, but the entire Liberal Party has taken this quote to heart, embodying it with their every motion, their every breath, their every belief? It's truly a true North Star for the Conservatives. I followed my heart without breaking any rules. Ah, just look at the Confucian wisdom there. Just so proper. And, you know, if they did break any rules, they certainly weren't aware that they were rules, or that anything had gone wrong, or maybe that anything had happened at all. So wise. So very wise. Now our spy news subsection, sexy spy news. Ooh. ASIO boss Mike Burgess has revealed foreign spies are using Tinder and other dating apps to recruit Australians with access to sensitive government secrets. Scandalous. Presumably sending seductive messages disguised as fuckboy banter, like, you wanna fuck the country? In a wide-ranging address to an audience of military chiefs, security bosses, and politicians inside ASIO's Canberra headquarters, Burgess confirmed espionage and foreign interference has now supplanted terrorism as the principal security concern. Especially now that most of the terrorists are white-wing. Sorry, I meant right-wing. I used to get those confused all the time. Right-wing extremists bordering on attacking the government at the behest of the more extreme ends of the government in order not to be controlled by the government. Yeah, I think I've gotten that right. During the past 2 years, thousands of Australians with access to classified information are believed to have been targeted by foreign intelligence services using social media profiles, which may be the impetus behind the reason of the Prime Minister's sudden and deep interest in social media, or that it could be his thin-skinned baby used to being in a sheltered position of power, but the power of social media makes fun of him and is slightly more upsetting than the power it has granted him, so, like, spread some bullshit, so it must be destroyed! Could be either. Mike Burgess said, these spies are adept at using the internet for their recruitment efforts. There's been a jump in suspicious approaches on messaging platforms like WhatsApp, for example. Clearly, nobody has wanted to date any of these people before that they had access to power, but now their proximity to danger, to information, has caused a reverse James Bond scenario where they get their neck snapped after inviting this mysterious new woman in their life with a super believable name like Ivana Fuckalot, or cool non-spy chick in your area looking to bone. But before they even have sex, they've snapped their neck. This is why they insist on hiring only the saddest men with zero sex appeal to the cabinet. It's an anti-honeypot measure. If any of the members of the parliament were even slightly attractive and one might believably want to sleep with them, then, well, we wouldn't have clear red flags being thrown up when someone flirts with them. It's actually why the coalition won't hire many women, because women can actually get laid, making it quite a bit harder for spies to be found out. Not because they're sexist. No. You've got to understand that they understand that women can get it whenever they want, you know? Like, men have to work harder. Women can just get it whenever they want. So clearly we can't put women in charge and nothing else. We're just protecting, it's a plot to protect us from spies and nothing else. Not angry. Moving on now to Indigenous flag news. The Morrison government has paid more than $20 million to obtain a copyright for the Indigenous flag, proclaiming they freed the flag after terminating commercial licenses owned by companies which had limited the reproduction of the symbol, creating the not at all uncomfortable implication of a white government coming in and owning an Indigenous symbol and making it Australian, part of the Australian oeuvre. But there is likely nothing to worry about since we've never had any of those kinds of problems in this country before, ever. Perfectly fine, perfectly normal. The federal government said the agreement also includes a payment of $13 million to the flag's designer, Harold Thomas, to secure the copyright, an establishment of an annual $100,000 scholarship in Thomas's name for Indigenous students, and the Commonwealth donating royalties from sales of the Aboriginal flag to the National Aborigines and Islanders Day Observance Committee, NAIDOC, you may know it as. Which is great, and I just want to acknowledge before I went on to make jokes, shit all over the government some more. So, like, now that I've done that, and now that I've acknowledged that this is actually a good thing, and there is some good stuff, can we can move forward, right? Alright? We got that all clear? I just wanted to have it on record. But now, this will mean that the government reduces spending on NAIDOC activities, as there is now a non-government source of money. So you better be buying as many of these flags as you think the future of the Indigenous people are worth, because they certainly aren't going to be putting in the money themselves. Consider it like a Patreon for Australian white guilt. The Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians and Scott Morrison's one Indigenous friend, Ken Wyatt, said, "In reaching this agreement to resolve any copyright issues, all Australians can freely display and use the flag to celebrate Indigenous culture. Now that the Commonwealth holds the copyright, it belongs to everyone, and no one can take it away." Morrison said in a statement, "The Aboriginal flag will now be managed in a similar manner to the Australian national flag, where its use is free, but must be presented in a respectful and dignified way." Which definitely won't be a problem when it starts to appear at Black Lives Matter protests or anti-government protests that are determined to be disrespectful or anti-Australian, as they are being imported from other countries. And we shouldn't be doing that stuff here. Certainly not like the anti-vax protesters that were definitely homegrown and not at all imported via online forums, as their countries weren't any national Australian. And there certainly weren't any national Australian flags in the crowd being used disrespectfully to fight against the government. That didn't happen. The Prime Minister said the flag could now be used on sports jerseys, shirts, websites, paintings, reproduced on sporting grounds, and used in any other medium without having to ask for permission or pay a fee. Which, given all the fees which go towards the funding of NAIDOC activities and sports events, would probably pay the most money to license the flag. Really, they should be required to make donations at the very least in place of the fees that they would normally pay. I'm not saying that I already told you so, but hey, I told you so. Morrison's office said Thomas would use $2 million to establish a not-for-profit organisation to make periodic disbursements aligned with the interests of Aboriginal Australians and the flag. The federal government will also display a painting from Thomas recognising the flag's 50th anniversary and the copyright transfer in a prominent location. Then going on to ask, the moon is a prominent location, right? Like, everyone can see the moon. If we put it up there, that's definitely a prominent location. Right? Moving on now to corruption news. Australia has recorded its worst ever score on a measure of corruption after a long-term decline, bringing us equal to Hungary. Hungary, who you might not know, have been doing some questionable activities like attempting to increase state control of judiciary, media, non-governmental organisations, and academia. The prosecution of high-level corruption remains very limited. While the absence of legislation and transparency in the distribution of state advertising has opened the door for the government to exert indirect political influence over the media, and whose Prime Minister and man asking, "Where did you hear that?" so he can send a hit squad of goons to stop the spread of false information, Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban, who not only sets up false opposition parties in order to split the non-Orban votes, but also was described by Steve Bannon as the most significant guy on the scene right now in 2015, likely because Albin styles himself as the continent's great illiberal and grandstands ceaselessly over the perceived evils of immigration, multiculturalism, feminism, and European integration, and at various times has been accused of peddling anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, homophobia, and anti-Roma sentiment. Whew, there's a lot going on over in Hungary. Let's keep going. Hungary also recently banned the use of materials seen as promoting homosexuality and gender change at schools. We're still going, are we? The Hungarian contestants at the International Miss Universe pageant, Victoria Jasmine, wore a Zara dress during the competition instead of the traditional national dress that most of the competitors wear. But hey, nobody pays attention to this because they're unsure if Hungary is considered part of Transylvania, and they don't want to be racist, but then they fail to realize that A, Transylvania isn't even a country, but B, Transylvania is actually part of Romania, not part of Hungary. And so, in considering not wanting to be racist, they come full 360 and become racist again. It's very embarrassing. But this is who we're in alignment now. I know that our country could probably list equally as long atrocities, but come on, guys. How did we fall so far down the Transparency International Annual Corruption Perceptions Index? How? Australia recorded a disgraceful score of 73 out of 100, which means that we've dropped a disorienting, nosebleed-inducing 4 points from our standing in recent years, and the worst result since Transparency International adopted its current approach to measuring corruption in 2012. So what happened? Well, the recent drop is due largely to Australia's failure to establish a federal anti-corruption commission, which is completely unfair. The coalition has only had 9 years in power and have spent most of that time creating fires that they then need to immediately put out. You can't expect anyone to take a reasonable step forward when they have thrown a series of rakes in their own path. They might get hurt. No. Best stay exactly where you are and just throw more rakes on the proverbial path of progress. And if you can invest in the development of technology for rake-throwing machines, which will automate the tedious task of throwing rakes, all the better. Just let your opposition walk down the path of progress. The failure to reform Australia's foreign bribery laws and take greater action to regulate lobbying, donations, and the revolving door between big business and politics were also cited by Transparency International, as were lax financial regulations which allowed Australia to be used as a launching pad for corruption in the region. Scandalous. Australia's performance in the CPI has continually declined in the past decade, which I am sure has nothing to do with the people who have been in charge in that time. They just happened to be in charge at the time of a global inflation of corruption. You can't help the times that you were born into. It's not Sauron's fault that he oversaw the rise of Sauron-based corruption in Middle-earth in the Third Age. It just simply cannot be tied together. Transparency International Australia's chief executive, Serena Lillywhite, said a lack of a federal integrity commission in Australia was a gaping hole in our system, with its proposed anti-corruption commission lacking transparency and failing to stop corruption. We will see increased levels of things looking like they aren't corrupt. Levels of things look just fine. No need to look over there. Nothing to worry about and can be expected to be raised all over the country as we head towards the election and the government desperately tries to show that they haven't spent the last 9 years preparing the country to turn into a shit as they expected to lose the last election and wanted to go on the full look what the Labour Party has done to the country offensive. Certainly, they didn't expect the Labour Party to run their counter campaign of fucking up a sure thing and got stuck running the shithole of a country that they had gone ahead and created and had nobody else to blame for it. Really, who could possibly be held fault for something like that? Moving on to questionable journalism news. News Corp, the fake news you can trust. News Corp has teamed up with Google to establish the Digital News Academy to send hundreds of journalists to university business school for training in what they are calling unashamedly commercial journalism. This is the first step in the streamlining of the noble intentions to resign corruption of hope pipeline, by giving potential future Australian journalists two clear pathways to follow: the News Corp School of Whatever It Takes to Make Money and Power, and the Arts and Humanities Focused School of I Hope Your Noble Intentions Can Pay Rent Because You're Certainly Not Making Any Money Traditional School of Journalism, according to a News Corp media release anyway. Murdoch's corporate affairs executive and corporate Doctor Who, Campbell Reid, will be the inaugural head of the Digital News Academy, and to give you a proper idea of the quality of journalism that will be spewing out of this house of the highest bidder, writer Joe Hildebrand will be available for students as an expert. I wasn't expecting that to hit me so viscerally, but... Sorry, I was just barely containing my disgust that right after the pandemic, they'd allow this virus loose on students trapped in tight space. The director of the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, Andrew Dodd, said the first he heard of the move was when he read a press release, and his concern was the training is happening through the business school, which is an unfounded concern, as Campbell Reid told Guardian Australia, the business school was chosen because it's unashamedly about the business of journalism, saying the academy would teach students to do journalism which was fit for commercial purpose right from the moment of creation, which saves them millions of dollars on editors who have to pass through the stories of these young, wide-eyed journalists and remove any semblance of hope or optimism or the intention of changing the world in a way that isn't preordained by Great Uncle Rupert's master plan, and will allow them to be rolled straight onto the website that will generate the most ad revenue. All hail the mighty dollar. News Corp Australia's executive chairman and man so plagued by life experience he's undergoing classes to relearn how to smile, Michael Miller, said the academy will play a role in equipping news media organisations and news professionals from on-the-ground reporters to editors and publishers with the toolkit, skill set, and mindset to meet the opportunities that digital media provides. In a not at all creepy or scary sentence. He then was heard to make a bunch of cash register sounds and danced around while all his assistants pretended to shower him with money in that sort of kind of way. Campbell Reid said the school would attempt to replace the institutional knowledge of newsrooms lost over so many years of attrition, saying the throbbing heart of the newsroom is not as vibrant as it used to be, though he couldn't account for the origin of said attrition. It's not like somebody has been buying up all the papers and newsrooms down to the local level in an attempt to control the flow of information. So I guess these things just happen. Probably Google's fault, which is why they teamed up, so that Google can atone for the unbelievable damage that they've done to the media landscape in Australia. Campbell Reid, however, has missed the fundamental twist at the heart of the school, which he is wholeheartedly embracing. that business-focused journalism is its own form of art. See, business journalism is a surrealist landscape trying to tell you that there really are melting clocks in a savannah out there where there's like a long-necked giraffe with knocked knees. And if you can't find them, it's because you're too poor to travel. And it is likely your own fault for not working harder to go and find them. It is literary whimsy and artistic assemblage of words that attempt to convince the world that X is happening because Y hates you, but really, X is picking your pocket while getting you to look at Y. The consistent use of the idea that the Liberal Party good, Labour Party bad, is all about finding balance. Students will learn there cannot be good without evil, right? So the presenting of all Liberal Party stories and announcements as good for the country must be balanced by making all Labour Party stories and announcements as bad for the country, even when they're the same announcement. It's a surrealist artistic minefield that sort of bends back on itself, kind of like an M.C. Escher. And finally, Russia, the redacted until war results are known of countries. Russia has been making a real big mess recently and has decided that after 2 years of play, before we can reboot the roaring 20s, they're just going to skip straight ahead to the 40s and finally take the Cold War out of the oven as it has been sitting there warming for over 30 years and is just about ready to go, I think. It's a game as old as time, when Ukraine was showing interest in joining NATO, and then suddenly Russia realised that no, actually, no, they want Ukraine. Ukraine is theirs and nobody else can have it. Responses from NATO have been mixed, with many countries turning to sanctions in order to temper the old Russian bear. US President and man still yet to realise that he is officially too old for this shit, Joe Biden has announced that he has called for a first tranche of sanctions as Russian troops rolled into the rebel-held areas of eastern Ukraine after Putin said he was recognizing the areas as independent. It's a move that Australians and some British should recognize, as we have an extended history of rolling into places, discovering that someone's already there, and declaring them as independent, as a place that is different to the place that it is. This is the terra nullius strategy. Putin said that the crisis could be resolved if Kiev announces Russia's sovereignty over Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that Moscow annexed from the Ukraine in 2014, and renounces its bid to join NATO and partially demilitarizes. The US sanction machine started by sanctioning pro-Russia oligarchs, claiming US oligarchs may still fund and benefit from war efforts, but Russians, no, no, no. However, they failed to sanction Facebook and Donald Trump, who, in recent years, have really taken to showing some positivity towards large, snowy, explodey, angry countries like Russia. Australian Prime Minister and man preparing to transition into his post-politics life by starting a band, Scott Morrison, has also threatened sanctions. In fact, he has claimed that sanctions are just the beginning. If needed, Australia will be ready to unleash its ultimate arsenal. The weapon we never thought that we'd have to unleash. Our nuclear armaments.
Take me to the April sun in Cuba. Oh. Take me to the April sun in Cuba. I can't remember the words.
Oh. No, no, we couldn't possibly do it. We couldn't possibly unleash our nukes. And while there's been no talk of nukes yet, as like with any nuclear threat, there is a degree of mutually assured destruction by fighting fire with fire on all fronts, so that Russia will have to match the ultimate American propaganda machine. Successful Hollywood action films with its own version. So to that end, Russian super citizen Steven Seagal has offered to fund the Russian war effort entirely by remaking all of his old films, but this time with a focus on Russians as the heroes. If Into the Spider-Verse can mint $1 billion, then the new SSU, Steven Seagal Universe, featuring all of the characters of Seagal's most loved movies coexisting in a multiverse crossover where we get to catch up on what they've been doing since we last saw them, will mint bank and fund the entire war machine. In an attempt to seem like we care about others, Australia has offered to open up all channels into the country for those fleeing Russian invasion by speeding up processes to place Ukrainians in hotel detention. Australia's most successful non-refugee processing system, where they will get to see the sights of their one window for a decade, wondering what they did wrong and why the country who's claiming to be good would treat people like this. Who knows? Who could even say? Scott Morrison was out saying some big statements at a press conference as he warned of the dangers of autocrats, but not until he had received full permission that it was okay to do so from Rupert Murdoch. In the press conference, Morrison said that Australia always stands up to bullies, which is why we have bravely stood up to ourselves for bullying the poor and vulnerable by allowing ourselves to sue people who badmouth the government for the way that they treat ordinary people. That'll really show us. Morrison had harsh words to say for countries that would seek advantage with terrible threats of violence to its neighbour. Certainly a disgraceful way to treat your neighbours. Australia would never allow its neighbours to languish, only to be propped up by a foreign power. But when that powerhouse backs out, you dust your hands of the whole situation and say, well, it was good while it lasted. No. Australia treats its neighbours better than that. Because that's when good neighbours become good friends. Instead, Australia threatens its neighbours with more subtle kinds of attacks, like eco-terrorism, causing the seas to rise like a beleaguered Poseidon dragging himself from the ocean in the morning to have his first sip of sacrificial blood from the Pacific Islanders. He can be a real beast before he's had that first sip of blood soaked in terror over a 30-year period watching a preventable death wash over them. What a monster. Nor would Australian officials think it appropriate to joke about such a matter as neglecting our Pacific neighbours to the point of only allowing them assistance if they offer to pick our fruit. However, with war looking like an inevitability, the heads of Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are rushing to ensure their products are ready to roll out and are only being used in a manner that would be considered progressive, or at the very least, attempting to help their users break their horrible addiction to bombing by labeling all their bombs and various killing paraphernalia to be used in the upcoming war with the friendly reminder to war responsibly. I think that'll really get the job done. This way, they won't be caught red-handed when the addicts get out of control. After all, they did warn them to war responsibly. Thank you so much for... listening. Thank you for hanging around until the end, and thanks for listening to this. I really appreciate you giving your time, coming back if you're a return listener, and or giving us a chance if you're a first-time listener. We need more people like both of you to stick around and share this with your friends and, you know, donate money if you can afford to. I know times are tough for a lot of people. We've got a Linktree set up, Matt Harvey Stuff at Linktree, which has links to all my shows and has a donation where you can support the podcast and you can support me. I mean, realistically, the best way to support the podcast is to come out to my live shows, and that means that I have time to do stuff like this. I won't have to think too much about feeding myself and all that sort of living stuff. But if you want to come out and see the shows, please do. Wage Against the Machine at Adelaide Fringe and Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and I got bit by a monkey once in the Edinburgh Fringe. Until then, stay safe, look after yourself, get your vaccines, get your boosters, and see you at a festival. Bye. Thank you.